In many ways, we are witnesses to the universe. But for most of us, the witnessing is done through the mind, through emotion, through ego personality, through drive, ambition, interaction, a kind of dynamic interplay with the forces of the world and the universe. And in almost every instance, for most human beings, the witnessing is done through a very small channel of awareness. The mind, in many ways, is programmed to see life as a particular kind of narrative or story that you were fed when you were a child. It's built upon by your teachers and your friends and the people around you. And in a way, you buy it. In a sense, perhaps you integrate it with your own interpretation. But there is a tendency to have it be a fairly small, dynamic interchange with you and the immediacy of what's around you. The ego-minded self is very much a reactive entity in most cases. It's very defensive. It's very controlled by what makes you feel good or bad. And it defends or promotes a certain kind of self to the world that makes you feel that you can navigate the world. The emotional life is very protective, very self-centered, very much about what makes you feel good, loved, cared for, or what makes you feel bad and unhappy, and therefore something to be worked with, avoided perhaps, shut down, blocked, obstructed. The whole navel chakra, which is intuitive knowing, is for many people completely shut down because the mind and the heart are so dominant. The sex chakra, which involves recreation and rebirth and renewal, for many people is stagnant, not used hardly at all. We just simply stay pretty much the same person we began with. And then the Kundalini, unifying energy force that tends to bring us together as a whole, for many people doesn't work at all, doesn't rise up, doesn't unite. It just is dormant. And so what is witnessing the world is whatever is the predominant force in your life. And it can be your mind judging, complaining, explaining, dominating, wondering, all of this stuff. It can be highly informed or very uninformed. The heart, again, what makes you feel good, what makes you feel unhappy. And in most cases, it's a very small, tender little spot that you protect in every way you can, because every one of you has touched a moment that really did not feel good, and you don't want that anymore. So the witness to all of this is for most of us a tiny portion of what is actually witnessing, observing, and becoming aware of the world. We have within us a capacity to know life. The whole idea of a spiritual practice, especially one delineated by a teacher like Rudy, is that we have these chakra centers that are not very well informed and not working all that well, or working just enough to get us through and get us by and help us make it into the next hour of our life. But the idea in a spiritual sense is to open these spaces more effectively, maybe more dramatically, more purposefully, to begin to witness life from a bigger, broader perspective. What starts to happen in the basic practice that we do is that this opening occurs in spite of our egoistic need to keep it under lock and key. It opens because something bigger is asking it to open, and something deep inside is responding to that. And the part of us that is aware of the world expands. And as it expands, we get to perceive life bigger, more remarkably, more beautifully than we had ever imagined, perhaps. But it is definitely an ongoing challenge to be able to witness more and more, because you become more and more sensitive to what you learn, experience, see, taste. You start to develop a bigger palate, but then you start to taste things that are really not good. You see things you rather not see. You learn things you wish you didn't know about. You have a part of your being that is now aware and open and unfathomably frightened sometimes of the world that's appearing. And the problem with that is that if you don't start to use the word that Rudy called surrender and let it be and stop reacting to the expanded mind, expanded heart, expanded belly, if you just witness it without making it egoistically personal, you become this knowing, available awareness that experiences the whole without judging, comparing, wanting it to be different, wanting it to be your way. You just experience it. It takes an incredible amount of training and time. Rudy's equation, effort over time. You make the effort to sit every day and just breathe into these spaces inside you that are basically happy to be closed and shut down. Not happy, is that may be the wrong word, but in a sense, familiar and vaguely comforted by the knowability of the tininess of your brain emotional functioning. But when you start to know that there is so much more going on, and you breathe into these spaces and you begin to expand the awareness or the witness, you get to a point where the personality is no longer, in a way, in charge. The personality that affects the kind of reactivity to what is being witnessed is just no longer serviceable. You see too much, you feel too much, you know too much. And in a sense, if you are trying to diagnose and play with and own all of this and put it into larger categories and more forms of acknowledgement and knowing and certainty, you will be overwhelmed by it. It's too much. The universe is too big, and your awareness and the witness of it is so big that you can no longer own it. You have to let it be. Just be. And then as you allow it to be, you start to see where your ego mind comes into play. You watch it because it's no longer the force that distinguishes what's going on. It's simply a force within that which is going on. It's a part of the whole, but it is not the whole, and it is not the witness to the whole. It is a very small functionary of the whole. And you begin to learn how to give it its space, how to acknowledge it, how to care for it, how to love it, how to be respectful of it. But in no way do you give it power to know the totality. It doesn't have that. And if you try to do that, you will be messed up, because the you that owns it is owning a very small portion of the totality It can try to talk about it and write about it and write books about it and sell it to others, but you're very much limiting its truth. Its truth is beyond the norm of expression. Its truth is meant to be present tense, exchanged with, sharing with, in embrace of all there is, all the other, all the self, the entirety, to be one with that. And it's not like the ego disappears, because it's still part of a body-mind function. And at some point, body-mind functions become very complex, especially as you start to get older. And I know I'm giving all these talks on aging, but let me describe that as you get older and the mind as you knew it is no longer working, the light bulbs are going off in a way. It's a dimmer space. The body, which used to be somewhat comfortable and strong and dynamic, is becoming less comfortable, less strong, less dynamic. And there you are getting impinged upon, and yourself is getting very loud messages from the deterioration of mind, the deterioration of body, and ego has a very strong response to that. And it becomes a real test in your old age of staying available to the larger witness when the noise factor from body and mind and world around you becomes so noisy. What do you do? How do you work in a world that is in some ways collapsing in on you, causing you great discomfort and suffering when you have worked so hard to be this vast witness that doesn't experience that? Well, the vast witness is still witnessing this body. And this body is making a lot of noise. And you have to learn what to do with that. Which brings me to a moment this past week, which was very shocking and worth talking about for a lot of reasons. But the central experience was going to an ophthalmologist and having the eye drops put in my eyes so I could have the test that they give you. And they put the drops in and they leave the room. And you sit there for about half an hour staring at a strange mirror, maybe with letters and numbers in it. And you just sit there. And I was sitting there. And for the first time in my entire life, I had a full-blown panic attack. I've never had a panic attack. I didn't even know what a panic attack would feel like. Suddenly, I was overwhelmed with terror, fear, a desire to run out of the ophthalmologist's office, a desire to get out of my body. My heart was beating. I was sweating. I had no idea what this thing was, where it was coming from, what programmed it into place. I had no clue. And my initial reaction is, this is horrifying. And then I had this moment of strange empathy for people who have panic attacks, because they are bizarre and uncontrollable, it appears, on most levels. They just play themselves out. Can cause great damage to you as a person if you react too deeply. But what happened for me, and the whole reason I'm telling you this story, because I think it's so foundational, I just went, do the double breath, do the work, do the work. I took a huge breath into my heart chakra, and in the very classical part of our practice, I asked for help to surrender. I held my breath. I let out a little. I took in a second breath into my belly. I asked again for help to surrender. I felt within seconds this unbelievable calm, this complete release of the panic, absolute gone. It was so astounding that the basic techniques that we have learned in our practice have that kind of resonance and power at any moment in time to revive you in a way and to remove you from the ego-minded, limited selfhood that is experiencing the panic attack, and just sitting down and finding the magnitude of witness in which that attack is just a kind of dysfunction that does not need to own you or take over the show. You are the witness, and you have a practice that allows you to be the witness. And if you have been working it, as I have for 50 plus years, it's a foundational, fundamental work that is there for you. And when these dark clouds gather, when these forces come and make you feel insignificant or on the door of total destruction or whatever it is that is your experience of a panic attack or of a great overwhelming fear or something that makes you feel panicky and wanting to run the other direction, take a breath. Incredible. I also started doing my mudra work. Now, I've talked to you a little bit about mudra work, something that has arisen over time in me. It's not something I was ever taught, but it has to do with the gentle movement of energies moving through your body, but expressing themselves through your hands. And it's hard to talk about mudra work in any way that makes sense. And I've tried to give talks on it a little bit, but the most I can say about it is imagine someone you want to touch deeply. It can be sexual, it can just be emotional, it can be anything, and that they're not touchable. They are not there. And watch what happens with your hand, if you will, or even your mind, as you reach out to touch the untouchable. It is shocking how much it opens you to touch, that it opens you to feeling. To touch the face of someone you love so deeply, even though they're not present, even though they're not available and may not have been available for decades, you can reach out and touch a being that is alive or no longer alive and experience this remarkable sense of connectivity. The teaching that allows for exchange of energies through the visual field also can go through the sensual field and the sensory experience of touching, even though there is no touch. At one point when Rudy was teaching, he would literally touch us. Often, as you probably know, you would be touched and you would fall over like in those great sort of pictures of sort of Christian churches where they touch people and people are there to catch them. Rudy used to do that all the time. And he would just be able to convey this unbelievable connection and energy. Of course, he also began to do it without touch. When I was sitting in the middle of the panic attack and I was taking my double breath and opening, this enormity of sensation in my hands was so strong that I could touch the invisibility of whatever was imposing itself upon me. And I could undial it. I could reach into it. I could expand it. I could calm it. I could make it other. The reason I share all this is because whatever capacity I have to do that, you have. And there will come a time where you may need it. And if you can even just maybe remember this talk or remember the years and years of sitting and doing the exercise, if you can remember that, you will have a skill set that will be remarkably important, remarkably important. And of course, we're all going to go through some transition from life into something else. And I suspect if ever there was a moment for asking for help to surrender, taking a breath, relaxing, feeling the inexpressible, feeling the unknowable, and yet touching it. If ever there was a time for that, transitions out of the body are probably the most important. But if I can just reinforce in you the value of your practice, of your sitting, of your day-to-day effort, it builds into a capacity that will function for you every day under many, many circumstances. But really, as you move toward the end of your time, this is when you're going to need it. So if you are very casual about your spiritual journey, it may not arrive with the assurance and the force that you need to have it be there to help you through whatever you're going through, which is my way of saying to you, the practice is really important. The sitting is important. The walking through your day awake is important. Expanding your mind, your heart, your authentic voice, if you will, your gut, you're allowing yourself to be renewed on a daily basis because you're never the same twice, really. Allowing this constant transformational thing to occur. And there will be times as you expand into levels and ways, parts of life that you never saw before, you never knew before, you that are totally alien, that you will probably be scared. Being scared is built into the biology of a human being. What's not built into the biology is the practice. I mean, it should be, ideally it would be, but somehow you have to come across this directive of what to do when life gets hard, when life gets challenging. It really helps to do that breath. Being a good person, which I preach a lot, being a kind person, which I preach a lot, can be helpful to you if you can be kind to yourself. It can be very helpful to others if you come across people in struggle mode or in painful mode or in having difficult moments in their life. You can bring your kindness to the table. But if you have this energetic space of deep witnessing stillness that will calm you to the core, that will open you so far beyond your own limited nature of pain and fear, you will be able to provide for yourself, and ultimately that provision will fill the space of other people. You will become the gift because you will be able to hold a hand physically. You will be able to touch a heart without being in there in that place. You will be able to touch a cheek or a forehead or just be available to another human being physically or metaphysically and serve and help. But the really important thing here is get your act together, get yourself together, get your energy in place. So when that fearful moment comes, when the panic attack comes, when the pain of God knows what comes from out of the universe, or whether the world around you is not behaving the way you want it to behave, you can just go into the still pointedness of the witness and go, it's very quiet. It doesn't judge. It doesn't know. It just is. It is so unbelievably aware. And it is aware in a way that touches eternity. It's so big that the little tiny struggles of our little bodily lives really become insignificant. Not, they don't go away because you're still a body, you're still part of the equation in a manifested form, but you will see in the larger context of your witnessing the universe, you are more of that than you are this bodily form that has so much dynamic and presence and believability. But trust me, as you start to get older, the coherence of this body-mind thing that we think we are really does start to disintegrate, and or I call it evaporate. And it's quite fascinating because when it does, the witness no longer can use your historical body-mind story, any of that, as a reference point. It just is no longer holding water. It's leaking out. And so what you have to do is simply stand back and watch the leak occur. Watch everything drain out, and yet you're there. But the you that's there is not the you of your story and your history and your pain and your suffering and all of that. It's just this. You can call that your spiritual journey. I don't know that spiritual really works as a word. It is your journey. I like witness in a way, presence in a way. You know, the word God plays in a big way for me. But there is this thing that goes on and on, even as you diminish and disappear. So learning to hand yourself over to that is really, really important. And that's the witnessing. Rudy gave us a little of an exercise. I don't think we ever talk about it, but I will just throw it out because it has been useful at certain times, especially if things are getting rough and your own breathing exercise doesn't work for you. And it's called the negative psychic tension release exercise. I don't know how many of you know that or have heard it before. Very simple. Hands down by your side. Take a deep breath into your heart and you ask inside for help to surrender. And then you add, and this is important, negative psychic tension. Sometimes he would say, and resistance. Help to surrender negative psychic tension and resistance. And you take a breath and you start to feel stuff from your head going down into your temples and your cheeks and your jaws and your neck and your shoulders and your elbows and your hands. And then it drains into the atmosphere, just drains away. And as it drains away, it empties you out, and the negative, fearful, dramatic part of your moment-to-moment experience goes away. He said there's also occasions where the drama is so great, you need to flush it with more energy. And he said, reach up into the sky and just ask for help again to surrender negative psychic tension and resistance or congestion. I'm forgetting all the words, but whatever they are, they'll speak to you. And bring that energy down, down, down. And let the hands go again by your body. Let it all drain into the atmosphere. And then you can shake them out. And it's gone. I share this with you, if I haven't before, because there are foundational things we can do. And I will tell you, you may need to do at some point. And if you can remember any version of it, it will be helpful. If nothing else, the double breath. Negative psychic tension, if you're going through a really tricky period, get rid of that. But the underlying truth is it's up to you. It's just up to you. Nobody else is here to do it. Nobody else will do it for you. You cannot rely on the world. A panic attack. Interesting, the New York Times had an article on panic attacks the day after I had it. And I read it and they say it comes out of nowhere. It does not last long usually, but it is a signal of something that needs to be worked with, obviously. Luckily, I had something I could do that would work with it. But I will tell you, you have the same skill sets, you have the same ability, whatever life brings you, whether it be panic, whether it be bodily pain, whether it be fear, whether it be whatever happens to you as a human being. Don't walk around thinking this shouldn't happen. I'm a spiritual being. You're a human being, and this stuff happens, and you have a mechanism, and you have a practice, and you can do it. That's all you need to know. Do the work. Okay. Any questions, guys?
Chris, I have a question.
Zach, yeah.
I feel like there's a need to approach the practice from almost like a more of a sense of seriousness or gravity, but I'm wondering how do you approach with like a greater presence without getting like heavy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's not heavy. it's actually light and beautiful. And the experience is usually light and beautiful. Although when Rudy first used to teach it to me, you know, the first years, he would look at me and I would fall on the floor like that. So it had weight and it had gravity and it had tension. But over the years, that force broke through so many of the dynamic disturbances inside, so many of the misalliances and structures that I started getting lighter and lighter with it, and it became more and more of a gentle force than a powerful push. It was so simple, and I just started to realize, yes, it's important, but it really is whisper-like. It's gentle, beyond belief gentle. And the mudra work that I do is so gentle. I mean, try imagining touching, I'm going to suggest your mother's face, and like right now, imagine loving her and just wanting to communicate. There's nothing heavy, weighty, or dramatic about that at all, you know? Or touch Wendy's face, touch somebody, do something. You know, just gentle, but you're not there. It's just in your mind. Whatever that feeling is the weight that this work should offer or sort of bring about. And it's there are times where it's really, where you really need it. But even in the midst of this panic attack, I wasn't doing like that. I was just going like that. And that's really what worked. And so when you say the work, it's not building a house anymore. It may have been that early on in the beginning, and maybe that is what it is. You got to learn skills and ways of, you know, doing plastering and putting in doors and screwing in, baseboards and things like that. But mostly it's a simple, gentle work. So it's the mind that will give it weight and heaviness and centrality in a way that's, you know, makes your mind feel good. But put the mind away and just take a breath, ask inside for help to surrender, and watch what happens. It's kind of amazing. It's just so gentle, so loving. And if you have that as a practice, you know, you have something you can stand on in life. And even as everything falls away, you're not standing on anything but empty space, but there you are. That's witnessing. There's no foundation, there's no gravity, there's nothing holding you, and yet you're being held. And it's an amazing reality. And it's something that is available. So, you know, put aside the importance of all this and just remember to do it. And, you know, I don't do the double breath every day. I have a kind of ongoing, I don't know, I call it gratitude, a dialogue with the forces that be, an interaction that's there. Sometimes it's just sitting back and going, it's just grateful. As you know, I now have a dialogue with the guys upstairs, as Rudy called them, and I both ask for their guidance and help, and I also offer my question, my wondering how they're doing. I ask them, how are you? It's a dialogue, it's an exchange. I don't feel like I have to look at them as something so other. It's whatever this is, there's an exchange and an interaction and a connection that is beyond beautiful. And that we make it into something heavy and dynamic. Yeah, you can do that, but it's usually the mind. And if you take a breath and the mind can just let go, that will go away. Does that help at all?
Yeah, it's very helpful. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay, thank you. Are we done? Anybody else? That looks like a done. Okay, I'm really happy to see you all. And I will tell you, if something inside you says, why am I studying with a guy who has panic attacks? It's a kind of interesting question, and I would say move on. You know, I keep the Buddha behind me now, you know, the picture over there, so you can bypass the Bruce guy and just go. The Buddha sat there for 6 years and barely ate and overcame everything, and, you know, God knows when he was dying of food poisoning, whether something in him got scared, I would assume probably. But I can only tell you, we're all human. And if you want to move beyond the human thing, that's fine if you can pull it off. And if you want to move beyond the Bruce thing, I understand that too. But I will tell you, there's a lot of connectivity that occurs here that really does love you so much, loves you so much. You have no idea, and touches you like that with so much care, even when we're not here on the screen in the class space. So know that you're loved. Know that I am endlessly grateful for each of you. And know that that gratitude, as it surges into you, is going to just feed many, many more people. And that really feels good. So, but, you know, it's your call. Anytime you want, I'm around. Lots of love. Bye.